God, this is so weird. It sounds like I'm Zane Gordon. But I'm not.
What is happening, my invasion pals?
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm great.
Yeah?
Great. Celebrating the Rangers getting their new hitting offensive coach.
Oh.
Offensive coordinator?
Person man? Yeah, offensive coordinator. So when did that become a thing?
I don't know. That's a very interesting thought.
Like, everyone I've talked to, no one got the memo of when that became a thing.
Pitching coach, hitting coach, yes. Offensive coordinator. Right. Is there a defensive coordinator?
I guess there is. Coordinates the defensive structure of the Rangers.
Well, who is it for the
I
Rangers?
Don't know.
Mike Zimmer.
Because I thought that the skipper was the offensive coordinator of the Major League Baseball team.
There's no way Bruce Bochy approved of an offensive coordinator as old school as he is.
Yeah.
What?
I do wonder, though, like, what does like a head coach of the NFL do when he has an offensive defensive coordinator and he's not the play caller? So does he just approve his job is to veto something?
I will bet, you know, with the headphones and he's hearing everything that's going on and he has the ability to say, hey, let's do this or do that. You're overseeing everything, win the challenge, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot going on a football field. And just think about when your head coach is your offensive or defensive coordinator. They're calling plays.
I don't understand how they do that.
I don't see how they can do it either.
That always makes me nervous, to be quite honest. When I'm watching an NFL game, I'm seeing a head coach or even just an offensive coordinator, but particularly if they're the head coach offensive coordinator, that they I'm like, how are you taking in anything? How can you make decisions this quickly on what's happening in the game? You have to get the next play going when you can't even really respond to what had just happened in that play.
And then while the defense is going, you're thinking about what's the next play you're going to call, and someone's in your ear trying to say, hey, coach, what do you want to do here? Like, I don't know.
Hot dogs. It's too nervous making.
Like during the week when you're trying to put together your game plan for the offensive plays you're going to call, versus how many times you actually need to coach and be involved in some of the other groupings and all that.
And why do they just script 15? Yeah, if it works so well when they script 15, script 40. And then you can plan on other things. You just have the plays already ready to go.
We know what they're supposed to do.
I know.
I don't know why they can't figure it out
yet. They should hire us.
Yeah.
Easily.
So, yes, what happened over the weekend that I need to be aware of to you guys? Something unusual had to have happened.
Something unusual happened to the missus yesterday that we talked about in our opening segment that I had never heard before in my entire life.
Oh, so, I missed this.
So she went to get her nails done. She's gone on a girls' trip.
Okay.
So she's getting all pretty to go on a girls' trip. And she went to the salon, and the last time she went, there was a fella that did her nails that she didn't like. And she wanted to try and avoid that same...
Wait, a guy did her nails?
Yeah.
Huh.
And didn't like it.
Because I've been in nail places, and it seems to be all women.
The majority of the time, but I've been in there where there are fellows that's working
on. The one
on.
Right down here has a couple of guys.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's not unusual, but there was a lady that...
Like big, burly guys. It's like Charles Haley doing your nails.
You know, they're usually not Charles Haley.
They're men.
Well, what are they usually like?
Just normal
dudes.
Looking guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Craig doing your nails.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Like Craig doing your nails.
George doing your nails.
Very average.
Yep. Okay.
That's
Jimmy
a dude.
Neutron.
He's doing
we good.
It. So, as she has the one lady there that's doing her nails and she's cool with it, there's another lady that walked in and said that in her vows with her husband, no other dude is allowed to touch her.
Okay.
So the lady had to leave my wife doing her nails to go do hers.
And the guy switched and started doing her nails, she didn't like?
But then she was like, no, she wanted to wait because the last time the guy didn't do him very well.
Okay.
So she waited.
He
she
wasn't
was,
inappropriate. He
no,
just wasn't
no,
that
no,
great.
No. Right. He just didn't do a good job of it.
Do you you don't have any problem with a man doing your wife's nails?
No.
A man giving your wife a massage?
Absolutely not.
A man...
Just keep going.
Yes.
Waxing your wife?
Go for it. That's his job. Go for it.
Giving her breast exams, even if he's not a doctor.
Okay, well, if he's not a doctor...
Oh.
mean, you got to hand me your card. Well, here's my card.
What kind of exam is
he has a handwritten business card.
I did play softball one time against my wife's gynecologist.
And it was
quite
a guy.
Quite uncomfortable. Yeah, yeah.
When y'all shook each other's hands, did you feel the power?
You're like, ah, look at that.
Knowing where each hand has been.
I was pitching. He was at the plate. He kind of gave me a wink and a nod. And I threw the ball right at his head. Hey, man. No, no problems at all. Why would you put that in your vows?
So she has a male gynecologist.
Yes.
She prefers that.
I have no clue.
I guess she does.
I don't care.
He has that expertise.
Sure.
He's seen so many.
He has. Every
day. Yeah, I
day.
Guess he would see more
every
than.
Every single
I know.
Day.
And then you go home and you're like, really?
Because, you know, the wife is like, hey. Right. That's your job. You know your way around.
So
let's go.
A male usually sees more of those than females do. So they should be female doctors. Like the male should be the gynecologist, right? Because he has most experience going into the occupation.
Well, he's not.
Maybe he's only ever seen one. Maybe he's never seen one.
But chances are he's seen, like you're guaranteed. I would say you're guaranteed a female gynecologist has at least seen one, but I've been appalled at the lack of anatomical knowledge that many women have of female genitals. We've talked about that on the air before.
But yeah, I
women
guess.
Not knowing how everything
but
works.
But you're saying
down there.
A dude has seen more. While that's true, it's not for medical purposes that you've seen those.
True.
It's definitely
yeah, it's different.
Pleasure.
And you may
it's
see
the pleasure
something you
principle.
Don't want to see.
Yes. That should be a song.
It is.
But I don't
it's
know.
The same, it's the reverse.
The principle mm-mm. of pleasure.
I've never heard NSYNC do it, so I don't know if it's a song.
You haven't heard. You haven't seen it on Friends, mm-mm. so it hasn't.
Nope. Never appeared in Friends.
That's right. No, it's you would think that has to be a thankless job. So thankless.
What, to be a gynecologist?
Yeah, man.
I think they get thanked all the time.
Yeah, thanks for looking.
When are they going to start tipping? Are they going to have the iPad when you're done and kind of turn it around just
gonna,
right when
just
you're
turn
in the
around. It's going to ask you a few questions.
You have to hit 20%, 25%.
I can't stand it. I did go into one place. Where was this? This was just like a couple days ago. And they spun the iPad around, and you had three options on the tip. And all of the options were 10%.
Huh.
Which part of me is like, annoyed that there's no option for no tip. Not that I would take it because I always feel social pressure to tip no matter what. But I like the fact that they capped it at 10% and all of them were 10%.
That would probably
because
make
now,
you do it more.
Dude, now I go to places and the lowest tip choice you have is 22%.
Yeah, I see that a lot too. And I just X out of that and leave a dollar.
And then I asked about it. I said, why is the low, just curious. Why is the lowest tip option 22% rather than 20% the way it used to be? And they said inflation.
Oh, okay. That
I'm
doesn't
like,
make any
I don't
sense.
Think you understand percentages.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think they do. They do.
Anyway, now, go ahead. Yes. You were telling me about your wife getting her nails done by.
And she tips her.
And the guy, the
oh,
woman,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
woman
yeah.
Who, the woman who could not be touched
by another
man.
Dude that's in the vows of her at the wedding.
Like
and Travis is saying that
feet.
It was completely brought up by her. And I want to disagree on that. I think there are way more controlling dudes out there.
I could see that for sure. Where
then,
the guy's like,
right.
You do not there, let another man touch
wait,
you.
Wait, you mean Travis is trying to say that the woman wanted it in the wedding vows?
Right.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know about that.
I totally think the opposite. That there are the more dudes saying, no. There is no other man
I mean,
will touch my woman.
Well,
no
she,
matter what.
She allowed it to be in the vows, and
right.
presumably she's okay with it. Otherwise, why did she agree to it? And
but don't there are some things
she's honoring it.
Some things you will say that you don't necessarily agree with, thinking that it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah,
you just said it. I mean,
there's compromises in a relationship.
Yeah.
Every good relationship, you give and take, even though it wasn't initially your idea. So, I mean. She's going with it. Isn't that
yeah.
honorable that she's
I
at
guess
least?
So. It feels weird. You remember?
And he may have restrictions on him. She may not want him to
No,
be.
No, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
They have them both. Both. A female can't touch him.
Your wife asked this follow-up question?
She said it, actually, when she was there. Okay. You remember when before, what year was it that Obey was stricken from the vows?
Obey your husband?
Yeah, absolutely, it was in there.
Love,
I can almost
obey.
Guarantee that, parents' vows.
I thought that one went both ways, though. Like, that was love, honor, and obey. Was it love, honor, and cherish for him, and then love, honor, and obey for her?
I think obey was just for the female.
Should we bring that back?
Yeah, I wish we knew.
Good luck with that. Good luck.
I guess if that's what you're into.
No.
Hey, back in the day, it was.
Whatever works.
Yeah, it wasn't in my wedding vows. My wife made sure of that.
The wife would get spankings back in the day. You'll see it in old movies. Sometimes they'll.
I mean, that can happen.
Full grown woman will get taken right over the knee and get spanked in front of strangers. The word by her husband.
Obey was officially removed from the bride's part of traditional wedding vows in the 1920s, specifically 1922 by the Episcopal Church.
Well, I guess my parents didn't say that then. I thought it was way later than that.
I will obey you.
Yes, I do will. Declare to
That's
love,
how everybody
honor,
talk.
And obey.
Now spank me.
Oh, it was creepy hearing that.
Like,
in your
no one
voice.
Even remembers. I don't even remember the vows at the wedding. It was so long. I don't care. Whatever. Just repeat after me.
You guys didn't write your own vows?
No, we didn't. And we only said I do. We didn't repeat. He just said, do you in the names vow to honor, love, and cherish and all that? And I do. And that was it. That's all we said. We didn't repeat anything.
I was like, whoops, see you later.
So is that like. Do I have the workaround here?
How much planning
you
did you do with your wedding? Were you involved in that quite a bit?
About 3%.
Oh, really?
And I wanted to be a part of it, but the first time we went out looking for things and she said this or this, and I said one, she picked the other. This or this. I said one, she said the other. I said, okay, I'm done. Just let me know when to be there and
I hate those
doesn't
choices.
Doesn't even matter.
Which one? The yellow one or the blue one?
Blue yellow, one. Yeah, right. No, no,
blue
no.
Blue one. You don't like the yellow one? No, I mean, it's fine, too. I like the blue one better. What's so wrong with the yellow one?
Just
go with the yellow one. It sounds like, honey, you like the yellow one?
I wanted to know what you thought about it.
But you didn't like it as much, and I want to get the one that you like. Well, I told you which one, but you didn't want to go with it.
Is your name Alexa? Are you listening into my conversations now at my house? Because that's exactly how it goes right now.
Why is it so impossible? You ask me to make a decision, and then when I make one, you want to argue about the decision.
You know what I get
a lot? Just you make, then fine. If sweetie, you make the decision.
If she cooks something new, and the first bite I take, you like it? Yeah, it's good. You don't like it?
Yeah,
I thought you just asked me and I said
it was
good.
It was good.
But it's not great.
You don't sound like
it's
you
great.
Like it.
Tell me what answer are you looking for?
What is it?
And then that answer will come out of my mouth. Let's make
fantastic.
It quick here.
So is it better than what I made last time?
I don't know what else to say. It's good. That's usually what I say when it's good.
That's good. And hey, women have lots of complaints about men.
Yeah,
we need to acknowledge that.
Not again.
Oh.
Facts.
It is crazy how women generally will keep up with the birthdays, anniversary schedules, gifts giving to people and all that. They handle
really
all that load
good at
very
that.
Well.
Yeah,
we went to a birthday party Saturday, and she got the gift. It was so great. I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that.
That is
because
wild.
I'm a dude. This is awesome. You are the best.
My niece had a 3-year-old birthday on Sunday, and she was out of town, so she texted me what to get her from a store, and I was like, I'm not going to go do that. She's like, well, you got to take a gift. I was like, why? She's 3.
She's going to get lots of gifts at the store.
You didn't go get it?
She's going to get lots of gifts at the party. So
Bring a gift to your niece. What is wrong with you?
I told my brother, he's like, good, because we already got too much crap. See?
So you know what I always take to those kind of parties? I just take a Sharpie marker.
That's sorry.
I take a Sharpie marker. I go over to the gift table. I pick one out. Cross out a name. Put my name there.
Nothing wrong with that. I brought her one of these. I got her this from the house, like a beef stick.
You brought her a wrap. Here you go.
Yeah, I was like, look. Riley, you're going to love this. It'll be delicious. And she's like, oh, thank you.
You doing keto?
What about eggs?
But she spit it out. Sauerkraut. I hate sauerkraut. All right, put up the signal.
Yes, yes, yes. What is that?
Oh,
American Leak Detection.
Here's Bob.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. So I would like to tell you a quick story that I discovered in the last week or so that had me really startled that I had been in this city for this long and had no idea about this. And so there will be people that are like, of course, but
I didn't know this.
I had no idea. So on Twitter, I have a project called the 1975 Cowboys Rewind. I think the account is actually 75 Cowboys Rewind if you'd like to follow it. And I'll be honest, in the middle of May, I'm probably not as diligent as I plan to be during football season, but it's a day-by-day walkthrough through the local newspapers, the 50-year anniversary of the 1975 Cowboys. Why? Seemed like the thing to do. Well, early May of 1975, exactly 50 years ago, there was a player on the Dallas Cowboys who went to UCLA, who played offensive line, whose name was Bruce Walton. A Walton who went to UCLA.
In the 70s.
In the 70s. Isn't that interesting? Because you may be aware that the 1-1 in the 1974 NBA draft also was a Walton. So this was the 1973 fifth-round pick of the Cowboys, Bruce Walton. And then a few months later in the 1974 NBA draft, the Portland Trailblazers took Bill Walton from UCLA.
Were they twins?
They are brothers. Bruce is the oldest brother. And somewhere Kathy and Andy are in there. Not sure what they did with their lives.
Bill Walton's kid.
But Bill Walton had a brother who played for the Cowboys for three seasons.
You all right, brother? Never, until you mentioned this a couple of days ago off the air, never knew this.
He was a backup as a rookie and then a backup at left tackle to Rayfield Wright in 1974. He appeared in 13 games. He started against the Houston Oilers in place of Rayfield. And in 1975, he continued doing special teams and backup stuff. He injured his knee against the Green Bay Packers, missed a couple weeks, but did return and played in Super Bowl X. And with Bill Walton, became the only brother combination to ever play in the Super Bowl and the NBA Finals.
Does that still hold?
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
In 1976, though, his knee injury caused him to go ahead and, I'm good. I'm not really going to play anymore in the NFL. And so he retired with his knee injury. And then what just kind of became the older brother of Bill Walton.
Was he also a deadhead?
I don't know about his musical leanings, but I do have two other pieces of trivia. When he retired, he became the manager of a jazz format radio station in San Diego.
That checks out.
Yeah.
And number two, he played a football player in the Walt Disney movie Gus.
Oh, my God.
No way!
So I have seen him act as well.
Which, of course, is the field goal kicking donkey?
Yeah, mule. was he the deep mule snapper for Gus the Mule?
So his coach was Don Knotts, of course. And I think their backup coach or assistant coach was Tim Conway, too.
Like, yes.
Really a high-level coaching
staff. Ed Asner, Don Knotts, Tim Conway, Dick Van Patten, all in this movie.
God, great movie.
Bob Crane.
Oh, the great Bob Crane.
And then, of course, Johnny Unitas and Dick Butkus and apparently Bud Walton.
Bud Walton.
Might need to review that movie. All right, so that's not why I'm doing this Bob's World, but it does open the door and provide some context. The Blazers signed Bill Walton to a five-year deal worth possibly $2.5 million. So he was a rich, rich guy making almost $500,000 a year playing in the NBA as the 1-1. Well, in May of 1975, there was a story in the Dallas Morning News by Bob St. John, who was the big Cowboys writer of the day. And it's all about
Bill Walton. And so they wanted to go to Bruce Walton. Why do I call him Bud? Bruce Walton to basically explain why your brother.
Is Bud Walton one of the Waltons, the rich? Must be.
Yeah, who's the Walmart guy?
I can't remember, but there's got to be a Bud.
Or maybe one of the kids from the Waltons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, could be.
So check out this story. When basketball star Bill Walton recently made controversial remarks about the FBI and called upon people to stand with him in rejection of the U.S. government, he generally lost middle America. He was knocking the system which had directly or indirectly made him a rich young man, yet those closest to him say he was not driven by controversy, that he was only voicing his opinions, and the outburst was provoked by a great deal of harassment from the FBI, which Bill calls counterproductive. One of those closest to him is his brother Bruce, who plays for the Dallas Cowboys and is in his own right an athlete. Bruce is currently in California acting in a Walt Disney movie concerning a donkey which kicks field goals. But he is certainly not untouched by what has happened to Bill and by what his brother has said. So now I'm like, well, what did his brother say? I need to know more about this. Bruce says, the thing that disgusts us all is the big deal that is being made of the whole thing. But he's a white basketball star, and white middle America naturally won't stand for one of its own bad-mouthing the system. So a big deal is made out of it. I think Bill's phraseology was wrong, but he was just speaking his mind and rejecting what was happening. So what was happening? The latest Bill Walton controversy concerns missing heiress Patty Hearst, indirectly. The FBI has been searching for Jack and Mickey Scott, whom it felt might have information about the whereabouts of Miss Hearst.
Oh, she was still missing at this point.
When the Scotts recently resurfaced, Bill Walton was with them. I think what Bill said was a culmination of harassment by the FBI. My parents, my wife, and I were all bothered by the FBI. They had people out to my house twice. They asked me where my brother was. Hell, he was sitting in his living room in Portland. They knew he was there because you have to feel like they were watching him the whole time.
So did the FBI come to Dallas to talk to Bruce? Or the FBI branch in Dallas talk to Bruce Walton about his brother?
That's a good question. I don't know in the off season. Perhaps yeah. They found him in California. But they asked me if I knew Jack Scott, what he did for a living. It had all been in the newspapers. They knew more than I did. But they were after Bill about Patty Hearst.
Okay, do you know the Patty Hearst story?
I don't remember.
Okay, so this happened in the mid-70s, and the reason that you would know the Hearst name is because the Hearst Castle.
Yes.
Which is
on
straight
the coast
up
of California.
Yeah, straight up the 101. It's a museum now. I've been on the tour. The Musers did a tour of it, I think, a couple of years ago. It's spectacular. He's the former patriarch of the Hearst publishing empire.
And she was a sophomore at Cal Berkeley when this all happened.
She was. She was a teenager at Berkeley. She's the granddaughter of Hearst, William Randolph Hearst, and she got kidnapped by the Symbionese Liberation Army or
yes,
whatever.
Yes, the SLA. That's exactly right.
And they demanded that two of their own be released if she was to return. And, you know, there was all this ransom talk. They wanted $400 million donated to poor people in the area.
And she started
Stockholm
Syndrome.
Sounds like Die Hard.
This is where Stockholm Syndrome came from.
Oh, is it really?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. Maybe I'm
okay, no, you're probably right.
Mixing up stories here. But, yeah, they were like, you can go. We're done with you. And she's like, no, I like you guys. I like what you're fighting for.
So she joined up with her captors.
Dude, she joined up and she robbed banks with machine guns. Like, for real, she shot up a sporting goods store, almost killed two people. When they finally got her, I think there was a huge raid that involved the killing of like six or seven of the SLA members. They thought she was it there. And then her court case was huge, huge.
Yes.
Pop culture business.
She got a couple presidential pardons.
Yeah.
And she's still alive.
That's what's weird. I can't believe she's still alive. But, I mean, she's probably only in her 70s
she's
now.
She's 71.
Didn't Stockholm Syndrome start in Stockholm?
I don't know.
It did. There was a bank robbery in Stockholm.
Okay. Was that in the 60s or something
like
that?
But it was very similar. She also joined them and helped them do other crimes.
Yeah. So, Yeah, it's a crazy story, but I never knew Bill Walton was tied to that.
Well, apparently he had been hanging out with Jack and Mickey Scott, who their tie into that story I would probably have to know a little bit better.
They were SLA guys.
But they were SLA, I believe, as well. And let's get back to Bruce Walton's comments. He said, they were after Bill about Patty Hearst. To the best of my knowledge, he has never had anything to do with her. Reasoning didn't seem too good to me. The Scotts once owned a house that Patty might or might not have stayed in. The Scotts had once stayed with Bill, so he was linked to Patty. Newspapers carry pictures of Bill and Patty all over the country. I think the whole thing was unfair. Bruce just feels Bill has been found guilty by many through insinuation. The whole thing has driven my grandmother crazy. No, my parents aren't worried about it. They just talk to Bill, accept what he says, and let it go at that. I don't think Bill really cares what people think, but just doesn't like what happened. Walton's off-season controversy followed his in-season controversy. His rookie season in the NBA was far from eventful on the court as expected. He was in a low frame of mind last season. Bill's an extremely fierce competitor. That was his rookie year in Portland. He had never really been beaten, and then he ran into Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who's the best player ever to walk this earth. Bill lost that battle. Then he hurt his finger, then he got sick, and finally had his foot problem. He was extremely disappointed in himself, but he made a lot of money, a lot. If Bill could play basketball in some gym against top competition without any pay and no fans, he'd be happy. I do think money is minimal to him. He'd rather live off in a cabin somewhere. But I also think he has to realize that the money he's made allows him to do a lot of the things he wants to do.
Like travel with the dead.
It is difficult to get the means to the ends and the ends to the means straight in the entire recent controversy, is the story in the Dallas Morning News 50 years ago this week.
Damn, dude.
By the way, Bud Walton, brother of Sam Walton.
There you go.
It is now official. The Cowboys have announced that they have agreed to terms to acquire wide receiver George Pickens and a 2026 sixth-round pick from the Steelers in exchange for a 2026 third-round pick and a 2027 fifth-round pick. George Pickens, the wide receiver, 6'3", 200 pounds, out of the University of Georgia, part of one of their national championship teams there. He's played three seasons for the Steelers. His best was two seasons ago, 63 catches, 1,100 yards, five touchdowns. Numbers fell off a little bit last year, but he also missed a few games with an injury. He has one more year left on this rookie deal, so the Cowboys will have that to deal with. And he comes with a little bit of baggage. He is one of those guys that is wildly talented, but can be wildly erratic when it comes to teammates, opponents, fans, and he's been fined a lot by the NFL.
Yeah, last year, between all of his indiscretions, which included the face masking of other teams, members of the other team after a play, like Jordan Lewis last year, $90,000 in fines from the NFL last year. And the year before, they believe the fines were over $200,000 between team fines and what the NFL fined him.
You mentioned that Jordan Lewis face mask. Jordan Lewis tweeted this morning. He was retweeting this story, this news that the Cowboys were getting Pickens, and Lewis said, "Confirmation God wanted me in Jacksonville." he didn't want to be teammates with George Pickens.
He didn't want to deal with him. And how many times have we seen those shots of Pickens on the sideline yelling at someone in a big game where he has like one catch or he has a lot of drops? There's just some strangeness surrounding him. Now, you can see a one-game example or maybe a three-game stretch where he looks like, man, he's awesome.
Yeah.
He is really good. He has incredible talent. But you got to mix that other in there. I mean, the Cowboys just have to hope that he's growing up. He just turned 24, so he's still really young. But, yeah, what goes along with it is not always fun to be around, and especially if you're not winning. It gets really bad.
From a pure football standpoint, he's easily their number two receiver now behind CeeDee Lamb, because until this trade, that was either Jalen Tolbert or Jalen Brooks or Jonathan Mingo or Ryan Flannoy. I mean, they really needed help at wide receiver, and this gives them – a really talented wide receiver, a deep threat. but he comes with a lot.
Yeah, and you try to square it in your mind. You hear about who they were drafting. Well, we want character guys. We want team captains. That's who we're drafting. We played those Schottenheimer comments yesterday about how important it is to have relationships from a coach to player, from player to player. When you introduce this to the lineup, are you just thinking, okay, well, his ability makes up for all that?
Yeah, but aren't teams who are trying to build culture with character guys, they don't care about that. They don't care about the talent.
Right.
They care about the character of the of the player.
It seems incongruent to what we've been hearing
right
for the last few weeks.
And by the way, that didn't take long. It's May 7th.
Yeah.
And we're already in the Schottenheimer era. We're seeing something that contradicts what he's been saying.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we talk more about this now with Calvin Watkins from the Dallas Morning News and SportsDayDFW.com on the beat for the Dallas Morning News, covering the Dallas Cowboys. Morning, Calvin. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. How are you guys?
All right.
We're good. So should we be worried that a coach like Mike Tomlin is giving up on a young receiver who averages 16.3 yards per catch?
Hell yeah, you should be worried. I mean, Mike Tomlin, when Mike Tomlin gives up on you, oh man, that's a red flag. And George Pickens is, as you guys pointed out eloquently, he's a talented player, got great numbers, but he can be a little temperamental, you know, which fits the Cowboys at times. And yes, I was there when the Cowboys said he wanted the right kind of guys and team captains and all that jazz. And Jason Garrett said the same thing, right?
Yep.
But they had Dez Bryant, who's as temperamental as it gets, right? You need talent. You don't need team captains. You need talent. And George Pickens is talent. And they don't have a number two receiver. They don't have a playmaker. And when he made this trade this morning, it was to get talent and to get a playmaker. And that's what it's all about. It's not about the right kind of guys. It's about the right type of talent. If you don't have the right type of talent, well, you're just going to be 7-10 the rest of your career as a head coach. And I think Brian Schottenheimer, who learned a lot from his dad, Marty Schottenheimer, understands that. And Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, they understand that too. So this is professional football, boys. So you got to get talent, not team captains, because team captains don't win you Super Bowls.
Yeah, I understand that. And, you know, you can – it seems like with – at that position – wide receiver, you have to put up with a lot.
A lot.
It's not just Pickens. It's a lot of guys in the league. I do wonder this, though, for a guy who seemed to get frustrated sometimes if he wasn't getting the ball, CeeDee Lamb gets most of the work around here. Jake Ferguson gets a lot of targets. I can already see a scenario where George Pickens may be thinking, man, I'm not getting enough work over here.
Yeah, I can see that, but I think he also sees that let me see. Don't want to mess around with Aaron Rodgers because he's temperamental and neurotic and whatever else he is. But don't want to meet and play for Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, pretty calm, cool, collected, is a leader in that locker room, commands the respect across the league. I think Pickens would be okay. And I think the Cowboys are embracing George Pickens because the way CeeDee Lamb, when he was responding on Twitter last night, he seems to want this deal. The Cowboys players want this to happen. I remember there was a report that Dak and CD, they were hoping the Cowboys would get Cooper Kupp, right? So
yeah.
The players want another playmaker. So this might be okay for Pickens to come in here and say, oh, okay, they really want me. They want me to get the football and those kinds of things. So let's do it. So it might be okay, but still – when Mike Tomlin gives up on a wide receiver, it raises my attention a little bit. Because when he does that, you see what happens when the guy goes somewhere else. It's a disaster. Antonio Brown is at the top of the list right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Steelers receivers don't usually go elsewhere and hit it big. Were you good with the price for Pickens, a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick?
Yeah, I was. you know, they don't have any players to give up for Pickens, right? Mm-hmm. So you give up the draft capital. And I think that, to me, was very important. The Cowboys, I've criticized the Cowboys the last couple of years about the draft capital they've given up, like the capital they gave up for Trey Lance. Now he's somewhere else. The trade capital they gave up for Jonathan Mingo, and they were praising Jonathan Mingo in the draft. Well, you know what? So much for that fourth-round pick, right? Because they got George Pickens, who came into the NFL as a second-round player. So, you know, give up a sixth-round pick in exchange for a third-rounder and a fifth-rounder, that's pretty good. I think that's pretty good.
Apparently, he was being shopped during the draft, and maybe they had some conversations back then. It does maybe explain why they didn't go wide receiver in the first three or four rounds. We expected maybe that or at running back as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Because there was a chance there in the first round to get Matthew Golden from Texas, but instead they got themselves the guard, Tyler Booker. And then Donovan Zwicky was there the second round, so they said, let's beef up the pass rush, you know. Then they said, let's get a cornerback, even though he's coming off ACL. Our doctor says he should be good in July. Let's get him because we got a lot of health issues at that position. So I love what they did in the first three rounds of the draft. And maybe they thought, hey, we'll get Pickens taken care of. This is similar to Zeke Elliott last year when they didn't draft a running back, and then all of a sudden Zeke Elliott was on the roster, right? As a free agent. So I'm sure that this has been going on for a while. It's just all about finalizing the deal. Maybe those extra picks, that one extra pick there, that third rounder, maybe that was the icing on the cake to get the deal done.
Do you think that there's that Breece Hall rumor a few weeks back? Do you think there's another trade to be made, and maybe that's for a running back?
Maybe so, because you look at the running backs now, including the two guys they drafted and the two guys they signed for agency, and it doesn't lead you to believe that, oh, they got the next Jim Brown on their hands, right? So they got, you know, I'm not confident they have a starting running back on their roster neither. So maybe they bring in Breece Hall, who knows? But the thing that I remember from Jerry Jones when I talked to him at the Super Bowl months ago was he said, we're not holding Brian Schottenheimer's hand. This is not a rebuild situation. They're trying to get to the playoffs, and they're trying to do it, you know. And Jerry, you know, I think he still is upset by the all-in comment he made 2 years ago now. And he's like, this is part of all-in. You know, like, this is our process of being all-in. So I said, okay. So this was a good trade, I would say. This was a really good trade for them because they needed a playmaker. They needed another receiver.
Yes. All right, Calvin. Good stuff. Thanks for joining us.
You guys take care.
All right. You too. Calvin Watkins from the Dallas Morning News and Sports Day, DFW.com. It does seem a little backwards, doesn't it, that the offseason Jerry says he's all in, coming off a 12-win season, he does nothing. But coming off a 7-win season, now he makes a move that is more all in than anything he did last year.
It never makes any sense around here.
It really doesn't, but that's the breaking Cowboys news this morning. George Pickens, the wide receiver from Pittsburgh, and all that comes with him, immense talent and a little bit of baggage, is a Dallas Cowboy, and the Cowboys made that trade. It hasn't, I guess, yet officially gone down. The Cowboys website says we've agreed to terms to acquire Pickens.
Okay.
And a 2026 sixth-round pick from the Steelers in exchange for that third-round pick in 26 and a fifth-round pick in 27. So I guess it could go belly up at some point, but it sounds like it's happening and pretty much a done deal. It's Wednesday morning with the Musers. Big news this morning, the Cowboys are acquiring wide receiver George Pickens from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Very talented wide receiver, comes with a little bit of baggage. Steelers are giving up on him, and he's very young, 24 years old. So what does this mean for the Cowboys? Well, joining us now on the Ticket Hotline is the owner and GM of the Cowboys. We say good morning to Jerry Jones. How are you?
Hey, good morning, man. It is a good morning in Cowboy Nation.
Morning.
Well, we wanted to talk to the GM about this new wide receiver.
Yeah, I GM the hell out of this deal, bringing in some talent here. I think George Pickens, he certainly, and he is, did fit my criteria for being being a great football player.
What is that?
I've heard of him, and he played in the SEC.
So he must be good.
Must be very good. And look, I've been told many, many times by many people that it is important to hire character. And I misunderstood and thought they said it's important to hire characters. And so George Pickens is a character. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, he's been fined a lot by the league and his own team.
He has, and he did. But will he be a distraction in our locker room? Let's hope so.
Why would you hope so?
Because I want anything to distract the locker room from our middle of the pack, non-playoff having record. anything that distracts. So I've made sure there's a whole juggling and card trick station right next to Pickens' new locker, so he's got all the tools to be a locker room distraction. But yeah, George, you do mention something that I've heard other people mention, that wondering if he's kind of a head case.
Yeah.
You know, he's been in trouble before. I think he's been fined more, you know, than I even fined Barry Switzer for taking that gun on that plane. And I can't remember what all he's been fined for. Do you even know?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's gone after people in the stands. He's gone after opponents, blindside blocks, all sorts of...
All right. Well, so.
Well,
you don't care.
I don't care about any of that.
It can be destructive. And, you know, 15-yard penalties aren't good.
I don't care.
You don't care.
Say something that matters to me. Maybe I'll start caring.
Well, okay. The Steelers haven't won a playoff game in 6 years either.
Good. I don't want the Steelers to win playoff games.
I'm just saying he hasn't really helped them
have playoff success. I like a guy who is independent-minded like Pickens who will, hey, so what? He breaks a few rules to get what he wants. I mean, look what I did to gate agent when the front of my pants got horny.
Okay.
Jeez, Jerry, her over a ticket scanner and force her to have an illegitimate heir.
Why do you keep bringing that up?
I gave her a half daughter. Hey, listen, I'm just pointing out that I like people who are risk takers, and that's what I see in George Pickens. I like that in him.
Okay.
Like it.
Well, if you're so excited, I guess you'll welcome him to town when he flies in.
Well, I can't do that.
Why?
Because of the restraining order, I can't get within 500 yards of an airport because of gate agent.
Okay.
But that's beside the point.
Does she still work as a gate agent?
That's beside the point. Listen, people are worried that George Pickens is a head case, and that's why I've done my due diligence. And I've hired a sports psychologist to work with George Pickens by the name of Dr. Carlson Maxwell.
Okay.
Teaches out there at UTD. And he says that he promises me that if he can get Pickens alone in a room for an hour, things will happen. Good things. So,
sure they will.
Dr. Carlson's coming up here later today.
I think it's Carlton.
Carlton.
But I think this is going to be quite a year. Think about this. We're going to have an offense out there, and we're just going to have CeeDee Lamb on one side, mm-hmm. and I'm going to have George Pickens on the other side. Mm-hmm. And if Dak doesn't throw it over both of their heads, we may get a first down.
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
I tell you, all my plans are working out these days.
And I'm sure Shoddy will keep him in order, too.
Shoddy will do exactly what I tell him to do. It's going to be great. Shoddy is great because he's a guy who takes marching orders.
Yeah.
Like when I told him before the draft to make sure that every time the camera captures audio from you and video from you, that you're talking in a way, ultra-hip way, that looks really unbecoming on a middle-aged man. And he does it.
This trade's also an example of him taking marching orders, I would think.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, and hey, I want to also announce that the finishing touches on my Jerry Jones immortal humanoid robot are being done right now.
Okay.
This is great. I'm sure the Cowboy fans are very excited about this. It's an exact replica of me that will live forever and GM the hell out of this team perpetuity.
Perpetuity.
Now, the only holdup has been that the AI that they're using inside it,
uh-huh.
it's been trained on over a 10,000 hours of my press conferences and interviews.
Uh-huh.
And all it does is spit out gibberish. I can't make heads or tails.
Now you know how we feel all these years.
What do you mean? I make perfect sense.
Trying to figure out what you're saying.
And my kids are fighting.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
We're getting ready for their big summer vacation. And it's coming up next month. And we're taking the station wagon to Disney World, and I hate this. I always draw the driving duty card, and because Gene don't drive fast. It drives me crazy. We never make good time.
Yeah, you got to make some time.
So I got to drive, and got all the kids stuffed in the same station wagon, except Gene is strapping half kid to the roof in a rocking chair.
Okay.
So Baruch has to ride up there.
Half kid.
Stop it.
And I dread it because also none of the kids go to the bathroom at the same time, so I'm stopping at like every third exit. Steven eats so many Funyuns and cheese logs, he gets backed up until it all comes out in one big torrent of hell. But it's big doings. But maybe we'll take old George Pickens with us if he wants to go on the same trip.
Yeah, there you go.
At Disney World.
All right, well, have a kick-ass summer.
I will. I'll have a kick-ass summer, and we're going to have a kick-ass season, too, aren't we, George? Let's get fired up about this.
All right, let's go.
We got George Pickens here. And hold on a second. I just got an email here. All right, no, the staff already had to fine him some $10,000.
Oh, no, already?
Up here. Yeah, I got to go take care of this. Good morning to
you. Good morning. There goes Jarrett. 847 on the ticket.
On the ticket hotline is the man of the hour. We say good morning to the Stars' great Mikko Rantanen. You are on an incredible roll, back-to-back hat tricks in playoff games. That's just unbelievable.
I think there's been a bit of a mistake here. This is not Mikko.
Who is this?
This is Nico.
Nico
Harrison.
Nico Harrison?
Yeah.
Well, what? I thought we had Mikko Rantanen on. What? Why didn't you tell our producer that you were Nico and not Mikko?
Well, I mean, the only reason I agreed to the interview was to have a chance to talk about hockey. Or really any sport other than basketball, because I'm so basketballed out.
Basketballed out?
Okay, well, this is quite a curveball, but I guess since we have Nico Harrison on and you want to talk hockey, I guess we can do that.
So you're asking my opinions on Mikko and the Stars, I guess, now.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, what about it? The advancing Game 7 and the back-to-back hat tricks and all that.
Ooh, good question. you know, Mikko has been incredible. And if I was the Stars GM, you know what I would do to reward Mikko for going, you know, having two consecutive hat tricks in as many playoff games.
What's that?
Trade him. I would trade him.
Can't make a trade.
So fast that he would have diarrhea.
That makes no sense.
This is accidentally Nico Harrison joining us on the ticket.
That's right. And yeah.
I know you don't want to talk basketball, but we have to ask you, are you glad the season's over since you became public enemy number one at Mavs games?
Ooh, good question there. That's really good. That's a good question. You know, I've learned a lot since the Luke trade and whatever his name was.
Luca, yeah.
Right. And I think the Adelsons have learned a lot, too. I think the Adelsons really get it now. And we're going to make some moves, I think, to really please fans in the off season.
Mm. So you got some plans. Like what?
Oh, another great question there. Well, we're changing the name of the street in front of the AAC. We're changing it from Nowitzki Way to Adelson Way. I think that'll go over really well.
No, that will not go over well.
That's a terrible idea.
And the statue of Dirk is going to be put in storage, and we're going to put up a statue of Patrick DeMont wearing a propeller hat and eating a bag of Funyuns.
That will not go over well at all.
Terrible plan.
I don't know. I think I trust our instincts on this more than yours. So.
Okay, well,
I don't know. We've been around here for a while. That's a really bad idea. And you made news this week. You fired pretty much your whole training staff again. What's up with that?
Oh, man, that's really an inspiring question. I do appreciate that one. Good question. And I really appreciate you asking it.
Sure.
I think the answer is I just really like blaming other people
okay.
for our failures and what we've done. So I think that the training staff was really responsible for the Luke trade. And I also think it was Jason Kidd who was behind it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he was behind the trade.
Yeah, and even if, let's not forget that the trade wasn't that bad. People are being so hard on it, saying it's the worst trade in NBA history, but they're forgetting Milwaukee trading Kareem to Los Angeles. That was the worst one. We're the second worst, so.
Oh, that's okay. That's still really
okay.
bad, though.
Yeah.
You want everybody to know you're the second worst.
Only the second worst. Okay. I mean, think about it. We kind of made the playoffs in a way.
Play-in.
And Luka and the Lakers were bounced in the first round, so it's not that big a deal.
Well,
people are making too big a deal of it.
Okay. I mean, this year, but let's wait and look long-term.
That's a great comment that you just said just then. And I really think it's great that you said it. And listen, Miko had consecutive hat tricks.
Uh-huh.
And you guys had consecutive failed voice bits now, 2 days in a row.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
And get on out of here and go mess up my life some more.
Okay. Bye. Well, not Miko, but that's Nico Harrison. Talking Stars.
We'll try to get Miko ranting in on Monday.
Okay. To talk Mavs.
Maybe.
Actor Mike. Let's visit with Luka Doncic, who had a tough ending last night to the season as the Lakers fall to the Minnesota Timberwolves 4-1. They're out in the first round. And let's say hello to the former Maverick star. Luka, you there?
Well, thanks for having me on. You know, obviously I'm disappointed that this is the end of the season. You know, I wish I could have helped the team get a little further, but, you know, you want to elevate your game in the playoffs, but let a naysayer know. You know, you're a great addition.
Let a naysayer know? Is that what you
said? Yeah, that is what I said, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, that was a tough way for it to end last night.
Dude, that wasn't my voice, man. You totally fell for that, bro.
Okay.
I was doing the voice, and you guys totally fell for it. You bros are like, you know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Bro, it's like our whole season's like over and stuff, man.
I know. Yeah, that's
but
real.
Man, that just means I can hit the beach in Santa Monica and see if I could catch some totally bitchin' rays, man.
I'm sure you could. Yeah, you have plenty of time for that now.
Brother, don't talk like that.
Okay, we got it.
That's the real one right there.
Brother, I don't talk like some dirty foreigner or some California liberal snowflake. I talk like a true Texan from real Wise County, brother.
Heck, a guy
who learned how to kiss by practicing on his sister.
Okay.
And learned third base from a cow.
Oh, my gosh.
Totally Texan, brother.
Oh, man.
How's that fraud Nico doing?
Well, I don't know. We've heard one press conference, but that was about it.
The Mavs fans are still booing him on my behalf.
Pretty much, yeah. Even in other venues.
Yeah.
Well, hey, what was I know it's over now, but what was it like playing with LeBron, and do you think it's over for him?
Hate it, George. I hated playing with LeBron.
Really?
Oh, man.
Yeah, hated it more than a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs, tell you that right now. Well, LeBron's nice enough, but every day he's like on his second round of weightlifting while I'm on my second plate of enchiladas. I mean, he shows you up, man. He sets the bar too high.
Yeah.
He's like over there getting a sports massage, and I'm trying to get my pants buttoned up and destroying the team buffet. I mean, I don't know, but, you know, I mean, slippery slope. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
Yeah, you see both sides of
it. I don't think he's going to retire. I think he's going to try this one more year with yours truly.
Yeah. Hmm. That's kind of what we were thinking, too, that try it one more time.
Yeah. I think you guys are thinking right.
Well, Luca, we heard after the game last night, you talked about how they've really.
Rich Phillips.
It is.
Rich Phillips. God, man, I'm a big fan of yours.
Really? Wow.
Man, I was a big fan of yours when you worked for that Texas Motor Speedway.
Yeah?
Not so much now that you're a realtor. But when you work for that Motor Speedway, man, that's my sport right there, NASCAR.
Really?
I didn't know that, brother. I love NASCAR. My dream is to get traded from the Lakers to Hendrick Motorsports.
What, are you going to drive for him?
I'd love to drive for him. Absolutely, man.
Well, you need to come back to town. We can go to the race Sunday.
Oh, I'd love it. I'd love it. If only I knew a good realtor that could buy me a house there.
Well, give me a call. I got you hooked up.
Anyway, go ahead, Rich. You had an interrogative for me.
I did have a real interrogative for you. You talked last night after the game about how they really have embraced you since going out there. What's it like to play in Los Angeles?
To answer your question, Realtor Rich, I do not like the people out here.
Oh, man.
Except the hot girls. Hot girls are fine, but I don't like the people. They're all a bunch of, liberal pansies. Don't like that. Love the California weather. Great weather out here.
That's pretty good.
But can't take all the dirty libs with their trans bathrooms. And I mean, just give me a bathroom where biological women can go number two with other biological women. I mean, come on.
That's
what Abraham Roosevelt's dream was when he wrote the Declaration of Interdependence.
I don't know.
Interdependence?
Check on that one.
So, I mean, it's a mixed bag. Realtor Rich, to answer your question.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so that's L.A. What do you miss about Dallas?
Tex-Mex and barbecue, Georgie. Tex-Mex and barbecue. And chili dogs from 7-Eleven. Love the 3 a.m. chili dog from 7-Eleven.
They don't have those out there?
Yeah, well, they got 7-Eleven. Just their chili dogs aren't the same.
It's probably tofu.
Y'all do them right there in Texas. I just miss the whole Metroplex experience, man. The chili dog in the middle of the night, the middle of the day getting cut off by a truck full of Mexicans with an overloaded landscape trailer.
Gosh, Luca. Jeez.
I mean, out here in California, they have tofu instead of barbecue.
Yeah.
What the hell is tofu?
I couldn't tell you. I have no idea.
I can tell it's some kind of caulk that they're calling food. So I just want to get back to Dallas and get on my tractor and knock down Nico Harrison's house.
Jeez, whoa, don't do that. You may
he's going to see about 3 tons of John Deere coming through that bay window.
Bay window. All right. Well, we'd love to see you if you ever do come back to Dallas.
Hey, man, my season's over here. I'm going to be back there first plane I can get out of here today.
All right. Let's go to the lake.
All right, Georgie. I'll see you out there.
All right. We'll see you.
All right.
Bye, Luca.
Bye, Luca.
There goes Luca. 8:48 on the ticket.
To this day would come, as a great man once said. I didn't know exactly when, but I figured at some point the narrative would shift in the national media. And today is the day. Luka and the Lakers got eliminated last night in 5 games by the T-Wolves. And, they had their fourth quarter issues. Everybody on that team did. They didn't have a... Really, J.J. Redick just refused to play anybody, and it was just, here, starting five, play 48 minutes a game. Have fun. We know we have a 40-year-old doing it, and Luka, who needs his rest.
Do you think there were good choices on the bench?
I mean, you play guys... Good choices, no. But choices to spell people for 4 and 5 minutes, absolutely.
It was a garbage team.
It's completely... Right? Well,
they don't have 5 NBA players, or they do have exactly 5, depending on how you look at it.
I think Gabe Vincent can play in the NBA, and he'll be in the league for another 10 years. Like, it depends on what you mean by a...
I guess these teams that bet everything on top heaviness, and maybe the Mavs are in that group now, and maybe more teams are than not, but it just seems like there's just complete ignorance to building a bench that can actually play for you a little bit, which is unfortunately leads us back to the Mavs were 11 deep this year somehow.
Yeah, they were. They definitely were. Well,
and they nuked it.
So, you know, Luka.
But this is related to that.
It is, yeah. Luka had his issues in the series and wasn't perfect by any means. And last night just got torched defensively. And, I mean, it was tough to watch. And with all the noise that was made.
And it was bad in Minnesota, too.
Oh, yeah. Of course it was. With all the noise that was made on this side of the wall from the Mavericks about defense and defense wins championships and out of shape and camp, you know, all of it, that all the rhetoric that we heard, that we all, you know, we defended our guy over. Well, in these last couple of games, it all came to fruition from what that narrative was. And so, I present to you this morning's first take, whatever it's called, with Stephen A. Smith and Kendrick Perkins.
This is big, P1s, because Corby has absolutely thumbs down any of this.
I do.
Any Stephen A. Smith, ESPN, daytime audio, Corby is bandit at times.
Yeah.
Oh,
I can't handle it.
But you've lifted your embargo for one occasion.
This is so hilarious and so predictable and so egregious that we have to play it.
Nico Harrison clearly ripped apart for trading away Luka. How do you view him now?
How I viewed him when he made the trade? I said that I gave a slight edge to the Dallas Mavericks when Nico made the trade, because if they were healthy right now, we would be having a different conversation about the Dallas Mavericks. That's number one. Number two, he's right. Defense does win championships. And I think what showed Nico was what Luka displayed in the NBA Finals, right? The way that the Boston Celtics exposed him. And then you got to think about, think about Nico's history, right? Who he's been around, who he was attached to, right? It's a reason that this trade happened and nobody knew about it. Who was Kobe Bryant's agent, Jay Wills, Stephen A?
Rob Pelinka.
Okay, who was Kobe Bryant's Nike rep?
Nico.
And one of his best friends.
So he's been around a guy that has a killer mentality and know what it looks like, right? And so when he see Luka and he see his habits, and now we hear the reports about Luka gained weight while he was sidelined with the Dallas Mavericks because of an injury, and that was the breaking point for Nico. We get it now, because it's unfair. And Stephen A., you just talked about it, how you're able to be a liability defensively, but you get to dribble the oxygen out of the damn basketball offensively while guys stand around, but they got to cover and play their behinds off time and time again to make up for your liability defensively.
I can't. I just can't. There's so many things wrong with that that I just don't have the energy. I hate to be Jimmy Butler bent over the table right now, just exhausted, but I just...
Don't you like the very beginning? I told y'all when the trade happened, I gave the slight edge to the Mavericks.
Whoa.
I mean, to the Mavericks.
Like,
yeah.
He can't speak, and he also can't make a cogent point. And save us the idea that being Kobe's shoe rep,
he was his best friend.
Any
he was
insight
his best friend,
on
Bob.
What it takes to compete, dude? Kobe says, "I need 20 pairs of this." Yes, sir. I'll get those right to you. Is overnight good enough? Can I send them to your house? You are not. Kobe's not. You know. Let's talk about building a title winner with my dear Nike rep friend. Just take. Waiter, away with all this. Then this idea, this false narrative, and I think you know how I feel about Kyrie. Love the guy. I've never said a bad word about him since he came here. I was one of the early adopters of saying, let's, you know, I think this can work here in Dallas. I love Kyrie, but everyone who wants to party because the Lakers got beat in five and say the Mavs would have been there if they were healthy, you're going to have to tell me how Kyrie at this age was going to score you 70 points a game. because you had no other shot creation on the entire team. You had a couple spot-up shooters. Klay Thompson was perfect in a team that had Luka. Without Luka, Klay Thompson is kind of a fish out of water because he doesn't create his own shot, nor does Najee Marshall, nor does P.J. Washington, nor do any of the guards you have, especially the ones your coach hates and won't play no matter what. So you have no shot creation. So let's suggest for a moment you have the best defense in the history of the NBA. How are you going to win if you can't score 60?
Well, my other
give me a freaking break.
My other favorite part is when Kendrick said, Nico knew when they watch the finals that the reason the Mavericks lost is because Luka got exposed by the Celtics. Do you know how bad Kyrie Irving was against Boston?
Yes. Brutal.
Do you know how bad...
But apparently he's in the club.
Do you know how bad the three-point shooting was, as great as it was from, you know, Derrick Jones and PJ against Oklahoma City and Minnesota in the playoffs, how bad it was in the finals and why they went out and got Klay Thompson?
It's not hard to find.
It's not Luka being exposed.
No. No,
that's not why Nico did that.
No, they don't watch basketball. Like, seriously, these clowns did not watch even the NBA finals last year to be this stupid. And to be this obtuse, like
Did Stephen A. I know he agreed with him a little bit in there. Do we have any of that, or is it just Kendrick?
The other thing that we have to point to is that certainly everything that you said about Luka was absolutely the point. We also have to give credit where credit is due to Nico in terms of what he had around Luka in Dallas.
First place.
If it were not for Daniel Gafford, if it were not for Derek Lively, if it were not for those cats, if you didn't have what was Luka lacking last night? I saw Luka actually giving effort sometimes on defense. It wasn't effective, but I saw him actually giving effort at least sometimes on the defensive side of the ball. But the Lakers didn't have a rim protector. Dallas did. And so when you look at it from that standpoint and you're saying to yourself, if you are Nico Harrison and the Dallas Mavericks and you make this move, again, we all believe he should have gotten more for Luka. Some people are saying, listen, you can't let it get out that you're looking to move Luka because then you won't be able to, it'll be a mess. And that's the reason they had to make the deal quickly, et cetera, et cetera. And
what does
that mean?
I understand
that level of thinking as well.
What does that mean? Like, people try to say that now? Like, explain it. Walk us through the if this gets out that we're shopping our generational talent. Let's go through the possibilities of bad. Oh, Luka then wants you to trade him? How is that bad? Suddenly the entire city isn't mad at you if the guy is actually trying to leave. They might be mad that you started it, but they would accept it the second the player says, you know what, get me out of here. Then talk me through the bad parts about other NBA teams expressing interest in trading for him and watching the price go up and up and up. You clowns, you idiots got one first-rounder, and you guys want to defend that because what if it got out? What if what got out? What? What if the paper found out you're calling teams about Luka? Explain to me the dumbest point you could possibly make.
Do you know what would happen if that actually got out, if like it did get out, and the amount of phone calls that would be made within that league?
Oh no, a bidding war,
right?
This is horrible.
Like, right, but
I don't want
but
five then, firsts. What are we gonna do with all these? Where am I supposed to put these?
Yeah.
But then Nico wouldn't get his chosen one of AD, and he wouldn't do a favor to his best friend Rob Pelinka.
The revisionist history is going to suck, but I guess the alternative was the Lakers, like, had to go on a title run, which also would have sucked. So, look, we're all just kind of screwed here.
He sabotaged.
By the end of the playoffs, Luka's going to be a guy that doesn't even belong in the league by these clowns. And Nico is a hero, and he's going to get, like, a contract extension or something like that. I absolutely realize the chances of Nico going away pretty much died last night. I realize it. I'm not happy
about
it.
So now you're down, you're out?
Well, no, I'm just realizing the cards that are being played. No, I believe it should have happened. I believe it could have happened. I believe it had to happen. I also realize with the jury on hand, the Dumont Adelson chuckleheads as well. They're everywhere right now. Like this was a massive, massive torpedo into the side of our boat.
Yep.
And we're taking on water.
He's here.
And I might need to pull up the stakes on that party.
All right.
Like the Nico was right claim is just like let's even say you had to move Luka to get the worst return possible. A return that made Rudy Gobert look like four times the player of Luka is just so botched. And then the idea that they have to make Kyrie the best scorer in NBA history to support their dumb point that the Mavs would have been on a title run if they were healthy. No, they weren't. They Luka had a historically high usage rate because nobody else on this team could do anything but spot up from three or catch lob dunks. And it was perfect for Luka. It is so flawed without Luka.
Well, I'm glad we played it.
Don't ever play Kendrick Perkins again.
My embargo was lifted, and now it's back on. So
holy heck, how is that?
Rich, it's so great that you're here because it's race weekend. You're going out to TMS this weekend.
My racing pants are going crazy.
You used to work at TMS.
Yep.
It's always a big weekend for you. Well, luckily for you, we got one of the drivers on, the official driver of the Morning Musers, Gas Cap Louie, joins us now.
Oh, man.
On the ticket. Good morning.
Well, how y'all doing? Good to be on with you fellas. I appreciate all the support y'all have given me as I've been trying to unseat William Byron at the top of NASCAR point series right now, and I'm currently sitting at negative 217 points. So, you know, if you have this rule in NASCAR, you don't finish races, you cause more than three accidents at a race, you get docked points, and that's what I've had happen to me, gentlemen. But I like William Byron. I want to make that clear that I'm not just trying to unseat him because I don't like him. Matter of fact, I like him very much. He was the best man at my wedding, mine and Donna's will, recommitment ceremony that we had in Pigeon Forge last fall.
Whoa. Oh, man. Gosh. Okay. Well, that's good to hear.
That's a big sentence right there. Well,
you got your whole team ready to go, ready to race?
We're getting ready, George. I sure do appreciate that, and I want to thank you for your support. I know that GoFundMe you set up last year when I spent laid up 7 months in the hospital, raised over $400, you know.
Okay.
That really went a long way to provide me with at least half a wheelchair. That's about all it covered, but I do appreciate the sentiment. It's good to be on with you, Rich. I love you. Love the entire HEB community and everything that's going on out there. Let's sell this thing out this weekend. Back to you, gentlemen.
All right, let's do it. Let's sell this thing out, man. Always love when you're here at Texas Motor Speedway. What is your favorite thing about racing here?
I love it. I love everything about racing. Racing has been good to me. It's provided me with a whole life. It's put my kids through college and everything. Give me two great grandbabies. We're going to be talking about them here in just a little bit. But I'm running at the Worth 400 presented by Liquid Molly out at the Texas Motor Speedway. And I want you to make sure that all your listeners right now are not confusing that with the Xfinity thing. That's the Andy's Frozen Custard 300. And also not the Craftsman Truck Series. SpeedyCash.com 250.
Right.
And also the Dirt Series In-N-Out Burger Fix-A-Flat 17. That's my favorite one that I ran in.
The 17?
Yeah, only 17 laps. Although last year I ran in that in the Tampax 57 car. That was my highly modified 1986 Buick Skyhawk Limited with aftermarket stereo, and it was stanced to within an inch of its life. I mean, them wheels had so much negative camber, them tires basically folded up out of under the car. It was horrible.
Oh, man.
But thank God Pinky Tuscadero in that Skittles number 14 car, that Nissan Versa, she knocked me out of that in the third lap. That was a mercy killing, boys.
Well, how is your car running? You ready to get it running, I guess, today?
Well, that's a good question there, George, and I'm certainly glad you asked it here on this very day that happened to us. I mean, we all enjoy talking NASCAR not only the day after yesterday, but also the day before tomorrow. So you asked me a real good question right then. And the car I'm running this year is a little lackluster in the power department. It also is a Nissan Versa. And we put it on the dyno, and that thing was putting down about 68 horses to the wheels.
Oh man.
Yeah, not too good, because Chase Elliott, he went right on before me, and his car was making 600, I think it was about 760 horsepower. So I'm down a bit off of that, but anyway, I figured just smart, if I take some smart lines, maybe I can cut that advantage down a little bit that he has. So I realize that I'm a long shot, and I'm worried about getting lapped before I even finish one lap, but I'm worried about that. But the main thing I'm worried about is really not having a Hans device in that car. They don't come standard with Hans devices on them Nissan Versas. So I just have the Luke device, which isn't as cool and isn't much of a attractor to the ladies as the Hans. Moment of silence for Dale Sr. Let's go to Paul in Number three, get him up. Here we go. All right. Okay.
We got him up right now.
Now, it's not all just the horsepower in this thing, right? You got to have a good pit crew. Certainly, you're going to be good when you come down pit road this weekend, aren't you?
That certainly is a very good question, Rich, and I'm certainly glad you asked that. It came out of your human mouth just then. We all enjoyed it a lot when we were listening to it and everything, and I'd like to go ahead and address it right now at this very time, in this very place that we have here. I want to send a special shout-out to my pit crew.
Okay.
Thank you, Donna.
That's it?
That's it?
Your wife, Donna, is all you have in the pit crew?
Special shout out to my wife, Donna, who's sleeping right beside me in this 73 Winnebago right now. Shout out to her. She's my wife. She's my soulmate. She's my entire pit crew, too.
Man.
So you roll up, and she changes all your tires.
She does it all, and it's real tough for her. I appreciate her grit and determination. She got a bad hip at 63 and takes it about 45 minutes to do a pit stop. But
oh, gosh.
But yeah, she works hard. She's slow, but she's thorough, so I like that about her. But pit stops have been somewhat enjoyable. At first, I used to get mad because it'd take so long, and now I just kind of sit back and do the Clayton Williams thing, just lay back and enjoy it and everything.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Right. Last year, I got through about the first six seasons of Friends just doing pit stops alone.
So you stream programming.
Yeah, keep a laptop in there,
stops.
Watch a little Netflix, you know, get caught up.
Making good use of your time.
Good use of my time. But yeah, but Donna and I just had our second grandbaby. We want to welcome Jackson Gascap Jankovic to the family.
Jankovic.
Well, Tim will appreciate that, I guess.
Yeah. I tell you what, he's something else. You know, he's about a year and a half year old now and everything. Okay. He's already showing race prowess. He rides that balance bike down the driveway, going about 20 miles an hour, straight down into the other side of the ditch, running to the huckleberries.
Yeah, sounds like a racer to me.
Yeah.
Well, hey, maybe
he'll be good for us. We think we're going to get him sponsored up pretty good on that wide bike, that little balance bike that he's riding on right now. We're looking at sponsors from Legos and all kind of Toyland stores. So we're looking at going ahead and making him in the Gascap family, being sponsored up real good and everything, bringing in some of this income. We're going to turn him into an influencer.
Well, hey, look for Rich. He'll be out there on Sunday.
You got it.
All right. Hey, Rich.
Yes.
You racing pants going crazy?
You know it, Gascap.
All right, we love to hear that down here. We're going to see you out here. Let's see all them P1s out here.
Okay, we'll see you. Right, there goes Gascap Louie, sounding more and more like Uncle Baby Billy just a little bit.
Don't worry about
that. Talking really fast and ready for a racing weekend.
Rich.
That's quite a NASCAR term he had in there with camber that he used.
Yeah?
Yeah, negative camber. I'm impressed.
Well, yeah, he's a racer. He
absolutely knows
stuff.
What he's talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm Paula Pan. I help people make the smartest money.
Four games going at once.
Yeah, the YouTube multi-view or something.
Yeah.
And I've only found it useful in football because, you know, basketball, there's too much going on. But football, they play for 8 seconds and then they stand around and play grab ass for 30. So you can watch the different ones and... I don't get to do it as much, so I don't think it annoys my wife as much because I'm not home enough Saturdays for that.
But right.
I do
when
love
you
that.
Are,
oh, yeah.
Four games going at once.
Hell yeah.
Okay. Well, this is one that on Sunday, if the Cowboys aren't playing, I'm watching the Red Zone channel. I think it's great. It keeps you updated on all the games. Someone crosses the 50, they'll go there. It sometimes gives you a game that, boy, you wouldn't believe what's happening in this game now in the third quarter. And sometimes I'll switch to that game. Mm-hmm. I think it's almost like a leader for you to take you to some games that maybe you didn't know what was going on. But most of the time, if the Cowboys aren't playing, I will stay on the Red Zone channel and watch it. And that's why I'm fired up for our guest that joins us now on the Diamond Factory Ticket Hotline. It's Scott Hansen, the man from the Red Zone channel, who is in town. He's also worked the NFL draft. He's going to be the voice on Madden 26. Man, you are owning the sports broadcasting world these days. Morning, Scott. How you doing?
Good morning, fellas. Great to be on one of the best morning shows in the United States, right here from DFW. Good to be with you.
Thank you for knowing that.
Wow, thank you for saying that. Yeah, we appreciate
it. If you're number one in Dallas since the 90s, which is what I believe I read, that is saying something. That puts you in elite company.
Yeah, don't read everything our station marketing department puts out, but it's somewhere up there. Yeah, something like that. Well, man, I think you're great. I think the concept is great. Do you get that complaint when you're out in the wild of people saying, man, that drives me crazy the way y'all bounce around to different games? Or I bet to most football fans, and I bet fantasy football players, I bet you're a hero.
Yeah, we get way more compliments than we do criticism. I'm trying to think. Sometimes I will hear when I'm out in public that I should say this, preface this. There are a lot of female football fans that love Red Zone as much as you guys do, as much as I do, as much as the audience does. However, occasionally there are some couples that will come up to me who say, my wife hates Red Zone because because she doesn't see me for 7 straight hours because I am glued to the television with you guys bouncing around.
Yeah, that's
I affectionately
a problem
refer
too.
To those folks as Red Zone widows for the 7 hours during Red Zone. Their husband is somewhere else. But most of it is complimentary. Occasionally you get, you know, you get the guy whose parlay didn't hit. He's going to blame me for that, you know. Or you get the guy who's taken the over in some game that's 35-10, and he expects me to cut to that game at the late fourth quarter field goal that will put the total over.
Yes.
I'm not your guy for that. I'm sorry. I'm not your guy for that. But mostly they throw bouquets at us, and, I mean, why not? 7 hours. Nonstop football, every touchdown from every game. It's a heck of a lot of fun to host, and I hope it's as fun to watch.
How much of it for you is day-to-day research to know everybody and everything, and how much of it is read and react to what's going on for those 7 hours, basically?
It's both of those. I saturate my mind. You only see me and hear me on Sunday afternoons, but I start Sunday night when I get home from doing Red Zone. I start prepping for the next week. I go through every highlight show that there is, making sure that we had all the stories told, make sure all the highlights that they have in their edited shows hours after the games have ended, that we had all of those live or 10 seconds after they happen. And then I try and familiarize myself, obviously, with all the rosters, with all the injury updates, with all of the storylines that we could be talking out on Sunday. But then when we get rocking and rolling at noon Central time, it's all extemporaneous speaking, all off the top of my head, and you're just reading and reacting to 8-9 games in a row.
Well, you're really good at it. This is Scott Hansen from the Red Zone Channel, one of our sports heroes, and especially during football season. And yeah, Rich does games. He's the play-by-play voice of the SMU Mustangs. I did games for a long time, and it's one thing to get ready and know players from two teams, but I would think you would have – do you have spotter boards? Do you have to – or just try to memorize guys who may be scoring touchdowns?
Yeah, it's pretty much memorization. However, I come across probably better than what I truly am. I have a researcher and a spotter who sit immediately to my right. They are both constantly on their laptops. And if I don't recognize someone, and it's usually someone, everyone who touches the football on offense, I'm quite familiar with, and even in a 2-deep or maybe even a 3-deep roster for the 32 teams.
But that backup corner who gets a pick six, you're thinking,
exactly,
okay, who is that?
Exactly. I'll go, dude, who, you know, whatever, who just picked off Kirk Cousins, you know? And I'm like, I don't know who that is. And I'll tell them where I have like a shorthand, like a signal that I give them if my microphone is hot, and they can pop it up real quick. And it's pretty smooth when it comes out in the wash, but it's the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain is doing all sorts of the sausage there to mix a couple metaphors.
The NFL does such an amazing job of making it a year-round sport. We just had the draft. We got the schedule release. Everybody's geared up for next month, and then mini camps before camp comes around. On the draft this past weekend, obviously the number one story out of it has been the fall of Shedeur Sanders. I don't know. What was your take on this? Have you ever seen anything that was so crazy with a guy projected to be picked so high in the NFL draft?
Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. I don't think we've seen anything like it, because I don't think there's ever been anything like it. Shedeur Sanders' slide will go down, no matter if he becomes a Pro Bowl quarterback or he's washed out of the league within 4 years, it will go down as one of the more bizarre draft days that we've ever seen. I think my NFL media colleague, Tom Pelissero, who had a pretty illuminating approach to how we got there, which was a lot of teams. I think a lot of teams got a little bit shied away from him during the interview process. Tom, this is speaking here. He had talked to people, I believe it was an assistant coach or some significant scout who remained anonymous, who said that Shadur did not have a good interview. In fact, he said it was the worst interview he had been a part of in all his years in the NFL in the private closed-door setting. And I'm not saying that was his experience with everyone. Again, that's an anonymous source. But if that's even remotely true, and I'm not saying I think it was because of the X's and O's of Shadur Sanders, but maybe more the approach. And I think some people probably looked at him as maybe he was a bit entitled. And that if he got past, combine that with there weren't that many quarterback needy teams in this particular draft. And I think the NFL at large thought this draft class of quarterbacks wasn't elite or wasn't as deep and as thick as, say, last year's class.
Yeah.
So combine those things, and once the Browns made their move out of the two spot and then didn't jump back in to take a quarterback, once Pittsburgh passed on him in the first round, that slide began, and it's to the extent that Shadur has a fire in his belly to prove everyone wrong and to shut everyone up, he has all the ammunition for a 15-year NFL career after what happened to him on the 3 days of the draft. But now, you know what? The Browns ended up getting him. They handed him the same helmet they would have handed him if he was the number two pick in the draft. And so now it's on him, and he can go out and prove it. It's going to be fascinating to see. And if ever there was a hard knock set up, it would be the Cleveland Browns this year.
Yeah, but 100%. But I heard they're a no-go, right?
Yeah.
Because they've been on it too recently or something? Or?
Yes, there are rules, and the NFL can be flexible with the rules, whether or not, you know, it's the new coach situation, or if you've been to the playoffs, or if you've been on Hard Knocks, there is kind of a parameter that they set. The summer Hard Knocks team still has not been announced yet. I'm not sure who it will be, but the Browns would be a great case study, though, if it were to happen.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we heard you're in town for a charity event. You want to talk about orphan outreach and the Children's Hope Dinner that you're a part of?
Yeah, I'd love to. I always love getting here to DFW. As you know, your listeners know, Dallas-Fort Worth is a world-class metroplex. There are world-class businesses here, world-class sports. And in the case of orphan outreach and others, but in the case of orphan outreach, there is a world-class charity, a world-class Christian ministry right here in DFW. I've been thrilled to be a part of them for more than a decade. Orphan Outreach is basically what it says. They have orphanages that they operate or partner with all across the world. We're talking Kenya, Latvia, Russia, Guatemala, Honduras, Nepal. I'm sure I'm missing some. But it's run right out of here in Dallas-Fort Worth. I've been blessed to go on trips with them to go serve in some of these countries. Fantastic work helping the most vulnerable in our world. And tonight's our big fundraiser. If anyone's interested, you don't have – I believe it's already a sold-out event at the Hilton Anatoly. And but they do have an auction that's running online through their website, orphanoutreach.org, orphanoutreach.org. If you want to go check out the ministry or you want to bid on some of the silent auction items, it should be fun. I'm going to be emceeing and giving a little keynote speech as well. Should be fun here. So thanks for letting me share about Orphan Outreach.
Yeah, sounds like a great cause. Hope you all raise a lot of money tonight. We appreciate the time
this
morning. And you keep doing you.
So for a long time, we've been trying to figure out the Luka trade. And we have heard the conspiracy theory a million times that the Adelsons are trying to blow up the Mavericks to give them a reason to move the Mavericks to Las Vegas. And while that conspiracy theory is about the only thing that actually makes sense when it comes to Luka being traded, I haven't fully bought into it until now. I think there's a fairly decent chance that the Adelsons plan, either all along or somewhat recently, has been to move the Mavericks to Las Vegas.
Okay.
And I let me just say this. Would I bet $1 million on it that that conspiracy theory is true and will happen? No, but I'd bet something on it. Because it's looking and feeling and sounding more and more likely to me. And I'll get to that paragraph that I read here in this book in just a moment. But the bottom line is, the Adelsons don't care about you. They don't care about the Mavericks. They don't care about the Mavericks fans. It's very clear in their behavior. It's very clear in their trading of Luka. All they care about is money. That is the only thing that Miriam Adelson cares about, is her bottom line. And she is going to do whatever it takes to improve that bottom line. And if that means moving her team to Las Vegas, to gambling-friendly Las Vegas, that's what she's going to do. She does not care that there are Mavericks season ticket holders of 40 years who live and die with this team. So you just need to know that.
Yeah.
Big article comes out in Vanity Fair last week about Miriam Adelson and how Trump's first 100 days in office have been really rough for her. She thought they would be great, big Trump supporter. But she's run into a lot of headwinds when it comes to a lot of her ventures. The tariff situation is not making things easy. She's lost a lot of her net worth. And as they write, under the leadership of Adelson's son-in-law, Patrick Dumont, the Mavericks and the Mavericks gave away their superstar in what was instantly panned as the worst trade in NBA history. The Adelson's family-controlled company, Las Vegas Sands, dropped its plans to build the Dallas-area gambling house for now. Dropped their plans to build the Dallas-area gambling house for now. Remember that. And, Vanity Fair continues, there's New York, where Sands spent about $400 million and hired a squad of lawyers, lobbyists, architects, engineers, and image makers, all for a chance at that jackpot in Nassau County. Big spot to build this new casino.
Yeah.
On Wednesday of last week, Sands president Dumont announced to investors that the Adelson family was ending its East Coast pursuit after more than a decade of trying, spending all that money and all that time to try to win that spot to build that casino. They have dropped it.
Well, that family has spent a lot of money through the years, haven't they,
yes,
on influencing votes and public opinion?
So then I went through recent Dallas Morning News articles about what kind of headwinds the Adelsons were looking at and facing here in the state of Texas to try to get gambling passed through the legislation so that they could build a casino here. And according to cobbled together morning news reports, before the Texas legislature met in 2023, Miriam Adelson dealt $3.3 million to politicians and political committees in her push to legalize gambling and allow destination casino resorts in Texas. Pro-gaming bills gained little traction last year in the legislature, but Adelson is going even bigger into the 2025 session, spending about $14 million in political donations in the first 10 months of 2024. Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor in Texas, said he told Las Vegas Sands that there isn't enough support among Senate Republicans to pass a pro-casino bill. He was quoted in an interview with WFAA. Patrick said, quote, "You don't pass major legislation in a red conservative state with the Democrats controlling the show, particularly on a major bill like that. They've come in and spent millions and millions of dollars, and they just think it's magically going to happen. Well, it doesn't happen that way." In addition, according to the Morning News, the Texas Republican Party's 2024 platform opposes expanding gambling and calls for lawmakers to reject contributions from pro-gambling groups or lobbyists. That platform continues into this year as well.
Mm.
So you've got all of that happening. They are running into major headwinds in this state in trying to get gambling passed after spending tons of money and just being burned badly to the tune of $400 million trying to build a casino in Nassau County in New York and then pulling out of that. And you have that Vanity Fair report that says that the Adelsons have dropped their plans to build the Dallas area gambling house for now. All right, so my book of the month for April, which I'm going to review later this week, is called Homestand by Will Bardenwerper. Small Town Baseball and the Fight for the Soul of America. It just looked good on the shelf at the bookstore to me. I picked it up. I'm glad I did. It's been a great read. It's about minor league baseball in America and how it's dying. And it's dying because of the corporate greed of Major League Baseball and their owners.
That's too bad.
And I grew up in a minor league town, going to minor league games in Oklahoma City, so I have a real soft spot for minor league baseball.
Sure.
We'll get into that whole story later in the week. But as I'm reading this book on vacation last week, a couple of paragraphs just jumped out at me and how it relates to the Mavericks. So I'm just going to read and tell me if any of this sounds familiar.
Okay.
The explosion of sports betting is unlocking even more money for owners. He's talking about Major League Baseball here. And he does a whole chapter on how gambling has infused so much money into the sport and how so many pro sports owners are just fixated on how can we maximize this. The Adelsons would clearly fall into that group.
Sure.
The explosion of sports betting is unlocking even more money for owners. This may partly explain why Oakland A's owner John Fisher, an Exeter, Princeton, and Stanford Business School grad and heir to the Gap fortune, whose net worth is estimated to be $2.8 billion, decided to ditch Oakland and move the A's to Las Vegas. The franchise value of the A's could double as they'd be able to integrate a gambling casino into the stadium. People in the sports industry believe that is going to be the next major source of profitability. Zero costs, and it could be billions of dollars in profits. Of course, in order to facilitate the move, Fisher didn't hesitate to take tanking to a new level, gutting a team that won nearly 100 games in both 2018 and 2019, and allowing the Oakland Coliseum to crumble while doubling season ticket prices prior to the 2022 season.
Hey, wait a minute.
In what surely appeared to be an effort to drive down attendance and bolster his case that Oakland wasn't worthy to host his franchise. Major League Baseball abandoned the A's fans in favor of a new ballpark in Vegas that will cater to gamblers and out-of-town visitors to the Strip. How familiar does every bit of that sound? Every bit of it.
And here you have the extra layer of trying to get the gambling thing passed, doesn't work out.
Right.
So then you add in, and we're not wanted here. Clearly, y'all aren't buying our tickets, and
they're
you say
following,
mean things about us. And
they're following this blueprint almost to a T.
Wow.
They're talking about gambling, wanting to you know, incorporate gambling, Mavericks in the same building as a big casino and all of that, gutting the team, which would be trading Luka. You go from maybe the second-best team in the West to a play-in team that doesn't even get out of the play-in. Doubling season ticket prices. You remember what they announced right after the Luka trade, that they were raising ticket prices.
Yeah, they went public with it.
They're doing everything that A's owner did to piss off the A's public, to where they all turn on him, and then he says, well, they don't want us anyway here, so we might as well move to Vegas. And Major League Baseball was all on board with that because they want a footprint in Las Vegas. Does the NBA currently have a franchise in Las Vegas?
I don't believe they do. It's been speculated for a while that that's the next place.
So,
wow, that's amazing.
I'm not here to say that this is 100% going to happen, but I am here to say that based on all of this evidence, and we have precedent, this has happened before with the Oakland A's, I am here to say that this is very much on the table. The Las Vegas Mavericks, or whatever they would call them, is very much.
Monday morning with the Musers. This is a Musers tradition. Every year, the Monday after,
we visit with the winner of the Kentucky Derby. So joining us now via satellite from the stables at Churchill Downs is Sovereignty, the winner of Saturday's Kentucky Derby. Good morning.
Hey, musers.
Sovereignty.
I tell you, I have been wanting to say that my whole career.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Man, to be on with you guys, that's a thrill. It is.
Well, and congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you. I want to thank the sheik of... I don't know, one of them Arab countries over there. He's my, they're calling him my owner.
Yeah.
But I prefer the term governor.
Okay.
I think it's time to update that. And you know, nobody believed in me. The favorite was the horse called Journalism.
Mm-hmm. 3-1, I think.
Yeah, that's right, George. Good. Yeah, yeah. I guess I proved that journalism is fake news.
Yeah.
What a galloping glue factory that horse is. I tell you. I beat journalism just like Trump's did, you know, cracking down on that stuff, man. I tell you, but journalism came in second, battled me, but I won. The rain was horrible.
Yeah.
I don't know if y'all saw
that. Was
that.
A wet track. Yeah.
It was, George, it was. And but I did like seeing all them fancy hats get rained on.
Yeah.
I spent all that money on outfits, and then the rain just gets, you know. I haven't seen that many wet women since I went to the Magic Mike movie premiere.
Okay.
yeah. Craig's over there laughing. George's like, what? And Craig's like,
147,000 people, though. That's got to be nerve-wracking.
It makes you nervous. It does, George. Totally nervous. I know it's nerve-wracking. The race alone makes you scared, and then you're running in those horrible conditions.
Yeah.
You know, I was afraid it was going to break a leg or something like that.
slip
and everything. I had that, yeah, my trainer, right before I go out there, says, hey, break a leg, and then realize what he had said.
Yeah,
and,
you don't say that
to
a horse.
Don't say it to a horse.
No.
But the messiest 1.25 miles I've ever run in my life, I mean, it was more mud than a Lollapalooza porta potty.
Okay. Jeez.
2 minutes and 2 seconds. I did the Chuck Woolery thing. That's how fast
I
ran it.
Two and two.
Yep. Had to put on my natural grass cleats, though. So I had to change out my horseshoes right before the race.
Y'all wear cleats?
We do. One by 1.5 lengths.
Yeah. Pretty dominant.
$3 million, I think, is what I won. Mm-hmm. Something like that. And I am going to go on a cocaine binge like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, don't do that.
I'm going to go on a spending spree here.
Yeah?
I'm going to get a tricked out Miata. I've always wanted a Mazda Miata. Caviar laced hay. I'm really into that. Going to upgrade my girlfriend.
Oh, don't do that.
Yeah, of course. You got to do that. I'm a winner now, George. Come on. But my girlfriend had a pretty good weekend, too.
Who's that?
She won the Kentucky Oaks. That's that race that happens on Friday.
Okay.
Before the Derby. Good Cheer is her name.
Okay.
She's a filly. And so I watched her run and everything. Did y'all watch the Kentucky Oaks, by the way?
No.
Yeah, I tell you, if the Kentucky Derby is the most exciting 2 minutes in sports, that Livy Dunn Kentucky Oaks intro was the worst 12 seconds in sports. I mean, she botched it. She couldn't memorize 2 sentences to say, riders up, you know.
Whatever.
That is the most unseasoned white girl in the history of whiteness.
Wow.
And
okay.
Y'all pushing her to do the intro. But her boyfriend wasn't there, that Paul Skeens.
Right, yeah.
Baseball guy.
Yeah.
So she may be single.
Okay.
Don't know if she's into horses.
Well, I doubt it.
I won't throw my harness into the ring. Let's bring it back down.
Okay, bring her down.
Yeah, so maybe I'll go out with Livy Dunn or think about going out with that Caitlin Clark.
Oh, yeah?
Really?
Yeah, she's got about the best looking horse face I've ever seen.
Okay,
so,
now.
No, I'm saying it's a good thing. That's a good thing for her.
Oh, right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, but and I want to thank Churchill Downs for that revamped paddock area. They spent like $200 million that thing, and it is nice. I tell you, we all got our own individual Robert Kraft milking tables.
Oh my gosh. So, wow. I can't even keep up with it.
Get a little relief before the race, you know. Ease the nerves a little bit. And I don't want to get into any hot goss here, but
okay.
Aaron Rodgers was there, and he had a ring on his finger, so a lot of people thinking he may be engaged to some new mystery woman out there.
Okay.
Yeah, so who knows, George? I know you love Aaron Rodgers.
I don't know that I love Aaron Rodgers.
Sad that he's off the board now.
I don't know about that.
George is like over there going, I don't know about that. And then I'm like, what? And you're like, who? And I'm like,
Well, congratulations, and what are you going to do with your winnings outside of getting a Miata?
You know, I'm going to get the Miata, and then I'm going to Disneyland. I am going.
That may be a deal that he had there.
Yeah, I just made $500,000 for saying that.
Wow, you're rolling in it.
No, I'm just getting together. Razor and I are going up to his place in Canada.
Oh, and, you know Razor?
Yeah, no Razor. Wow. Go way back. And so we're going to do some hunting up there. It's going to be fun.
Well,
are you okay?
I'm so sorry. I gotta go. That was not just air. So okay. I gotta go. Thank you very much.
Well, good luck, Sovereignty.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Congratulations.